ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 10, the Patra Lord Krishna for Dwarka, text number 4.
Kamam
Vavarsha
Ajanya Sarva
Kama
Dugha
Mahi
Sishichu
Sma
Rajan
Gavaha
Hayoso Das Pati
Muda
Kaman Vavasha Pajanya Savakama Gamayi Sisishu Smavrajan Gavaha Ayaso das patir muta. Karman vavasha pajanya. Savakama dugamayi. Sisich chusma sarvarajam gava. Ayaso das patir muta. Kamam vavasha pajanya sarva kama dukhamahi shishchu smavrajam gaha ayaso vasati muda kamam
everything needed
vavasha
was showered.
Parjanyaha
rains.
Sarva
everything.
Kama
necessities.
Dugha
producer.
Mahi
the land.
Sisichusma
moisten.
Vrajan
pasturing grounds.
Gavaha,
the cow.
Payasa,
Udasvati,
due to swollen milk bags.
Muda,
because of a joyful attitude.
Translation. During the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the clouds showered all the water that people needed, and the earth produced all the necessities of man in profusion. Due to its fatty milk bag and cheerful attitude, the cow used to moisten the grazing ground with milk.
Purport.
The basic principle of economic development is centered on land and cows. The necessities of human society are food grains, fruits, milk, minerals, clothing, wood, etc. One requires all these items to fulfill the material needs of the body. Certainly, one does not require flesh and fish or iron tools and machinery. During the regime of Maharaj Yudhisthira, all over the world there were regulated rainfalls. Rainfalls are not in control of a human being. The heavenly king Indradeva is the controller of rains, and he is the servant of the Lord. When the Lord is obeyed by the king and the people under the king's administration, there are regulated rains from the horizon, and these rains are the causes of all varieties of production on the land. Not only do regulated rains help ample food production of grains and fruits, but when they combine with astronomical influences, there is ample production of valuable stones and pearls. Grains and vegetables can sumptuously feed a man and animals, and a fatty cow delivers enough milk to supply a man sumptuously with vigor and vitality. If there is enough milk, enough grains, enough fruit, enough cotton, enough silk, and enough jewels, then why do the people need cinemas, houses of prostitution, slaughterhouses, etc.? What is the need of an artificial, luxurious life of cinemas, cars, radio, flesh, and hotels? Has this civilization produced anything but quarreling, individually and nationally? Has this civilization enhanced the cause of equality and fraternity by sending thousands of men into a hellish factory and the war fields at the whims of a particular man? It is said here that the cows used to moisten the pasturing land with milk because their milk bags were fatty and the animals were joyful. Do they not require, therefore, proper protection for a joyful life by being fed with a sufficient quantity of grass in the field? Why should men kill cows for their selfish purposes? Why should man not be satisfied with grains, fruits, and milk, which, combined together, can produce hundreds and thousands of palatable dishes? Why are there slaughterhouses all over the world to kill innocent animals? Maharaj Pirikshit, grandson of Maharaj Yudhisthira, while touring his vast kingdom, saw a black man attempting to kill a cow. The king at once arrested the butcher and chastised him sufficiently. Should not a king or an executive head protect the lives of the poor animals who are unable to defend themselves? Is this humanity? Are not the animals of a country citizens also? Then why are they allowed to be butchered in organized slaughterhouses? Are these the signs of equality, fraternity, and non-violence? Therefore, in contrast with the modern advanced civilized form of government, an autocracy like Maharaj Yudhisthira's is by far superior to a so-called democracy in which animals are killed and a man less than an animal is allowed to cast votes for another less than animal man. We are all creatures of material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita it is said that the Lord himself is the seed-giving father, and material nature is the mother of all living beings in all shapes. Thus mother material nature has enough foodstuff both for animals and for men by the grace of the Father Almighty, Sri Krishna. The human being is the elder brother of all other living beings. He is endowed with intelligence more powerful than animals for realizing the course of nature and the indications of the Almighty Father. Human civilization should depend on the production of material nature without artificially attempting economic development to turn the world into a chaos of artificial greed and power only for the purpose of artificial luxuries and sense gratification. This is but the life of dogs and hogs.
Om Agyanati Mirandasya Yananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaham Darati Swaparantikam Namasreshtam Anumapi Sachiputra Matra Swarupam Rupam Tasya Grajam Rupurim Maturingo Stavrikim Radha Kunda Girivara Mahora Rika Madhavasam Praptaya Sapatita Kripaya Sri Gurum Tam Natosmi Kamam Bhavasha Pajanya Savakama Dugamahi Sisichu Smabra Jangava Payasoda Patir Matmuda.
During the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the clouds showered all the water that people needed, and the earth produced all the necessities of man in profusion. Due to its fatty milk bag and cheerful attitude, the cow used to moisten the grazing ground with milk. In many places, Srila Prabhupada describes the principle of economic development, the real principle of economic development, that's based on land and cows, centered around land and cows. And the cow protection gurus, they teach us that there's no such thing as cow protection without bullets. We have a tendency to think that cow protection means we look after the cows, because the cow gives lots of milk. The bullock doesn't give milk. But we like the cow more because she gives milk. And oftentimes we ask the devotees, how many cows are there at the farm? And then the second question is, how many cows are milking at the farm? But rarely do we ask, how many bullocks are at the farm? And how many bullocks are working? We don't often ask that question. But Balabhadra Prabhu, who's one of the big in ISKCON, he's one of the very experienced cow protection devotees. He impresses upon us, he emphasizes the importance of the bullock in this equation, or the bullocks. Because the bullocks are producing, they're cultivating the field. Without the bullocks, we can't cultivate the land. At least we can't do it naturally. We can do it artificially, with tractors, and we can do it artificially with different means. But without the bullocks, the bullocks do the hard work, and they need to be engaged. And they're 50% of the produce of a cow. When a bull and a cow unite, there's a 50-50 chance of having a bull, a boy. Right? So we need to look after them also. The boys need to be looked after, and the girls need to be looked after. The cows and the bulls need to be looked after. And Prabhupada, in the purport, he says that when the cows are looked after, they will give sufficient milk, which can provide nutrition for the fine brain tissues of the human beings, so that we can continue to discriminate, so that we can continue to make this proper choice. Prabhupada says we're the elder brothers of civilization, the human beings. So the animals are our brothers and sisters, in one sense. And the trees and the birds and all species. In the seventh canto it says that even the fly is our brother. We should consider the fly to be our brothers. And mosquitoes. Sometimes we don't treat them like that. At least we don't treat them like a good brother. And we chase them out of the house. We have a system in our house that we chase the flies out with a jar. We have a big couple of jars at the front of the house, and they're the fly catching jars. So we catch the flies, put the lid on them, and we kick them out of the house. But every time we do that, we're chasing flies out, I'm thinking that the Bhagavatam says that they're our friends. We should be like our brother, and we're throwing our brother out of the house all the time. But this brother happens to be a dirty one, and he passes stool all over the place. It's hard to train him, so we just kick him out of the house. And his other friends are coming too. We had a mouse in the house just before we came over here in our cupboard. And one mouse caused so much havoc. Actually, it wasn't a mouse, it was a rat. It was a huge rat in the house. We live next to a reserve. And we'd never had any. We'd been there for 3 years. We never had even a mouse and anything like that. And we went away and we came back after a week or two, and just in the cupboard, in the bedroom, every dhoti and every sari and everything was messed up with rat stool everywhere. And so we had to wash every single item of clothing in the house, and we had to get rid of this rat, this dirty rat. But luckily he just stayed in our room. He just stayed in one place in the room. We got the rat trap and we caught him. One of these bigger IMSA traps. The rat comes in and the gate closes and he's in there and he feeds away. And then we took him to the industrial area and we dropped him off at the back of the factories. And we set the trap again and we had no more rats. So it's... They're our brothers. and our sisters, and we shouldn't mistreat them unnecessarily, unless they cause them complete havoc, and then we have to take severe measures. But first, the first measure is to try to get rid of them. Prabhupada would put some grains out for the mice in the his father would put grains out for the mice in his shop, so they wouldn't eat the cloth. The first night when I came here, there was a mouse ran across the room upstairs in Prabhupada's house. He was greeting me, and I left out some grain in front of the fireplace up there, and sure enough he ate the grain that night. But I haven't seen him since. We had one time in we had a big problem with mice. We live on a big farming community. It's a rural district, so there's rats everywhere. And they jump out of the rubbish bins at the school, and they chase the kids around the playground. And they're a bit of a havoc at Yuvashana, unfortunately. And we didn't want to kill them. We didn't want to get the guys into nuke and bring in the heavy artillery. So we decided that we'll feed them. And we got the cook in the school, Tilakini Mataji, to make some big laddus, like this size laddu. And she made like about 20 laddus or something. It was for a big feast, and we had a special offering for the rats. We offered all this prasadam, and then we kept a big pile, a mountain of laddus, and went over to the school with some of the kids, and we put these laddus all around the building. We know they come out of this part of the underneath year one classroom, and they jump into the rubbish bin. So we put some there, and put some outside the art room, put some outside the library, and because we know their powers pretty well. So we fed all these rats, and we did a big yagya. We chanted Brahma Samhita for them. And we said, look, Ganeshji, you're a servant of Krishna, and the rats are your servants, right? So, yad pada palava vidam vindaya kumbha dvandve panama samaya saganadi raja vignan vihantaman masya jagatrayasya govinda madhipurushan. Please give Ganeshji, who's a servant of Govinda, tell these rats to get out of here, because they're messing up our school. And believe it or not, the rats left. The rats didn't come back for years. We didn't see a rat for at least another year. They've come back, but they didn't come back for a long time. And most people thought we were completely crazy. And I thought we should just get in rent-a-killing, just get rid of them. But that was a different way of moving the rats on. More in tune with the Bhagavatam. More in tune with Prabhupada and the teachings of the Bhagavatam. That we don't have to kill everybody unnecessarily. And this killing's going on, Prabhupada says, we're opening these slaughterhouses because of unrestricted senses. Because the mind's out of control. And the senses can never be satisfied. And so it's something which is superfluous. In the seventh chapter, you heard in previous to this, that the sense gratification is unnecessary for living entity. Anato pasamam sakshat bhakti yoga madokshati. That the mass of living entities, they don't understand this point. And that's the point the Prabhupada's making here today, very strongly. That we have to become self-satisfied and to accept what has been provided to us by nature. Accept our quota. When we accept our quota, we become satisfied, the mind becomes peaceful, and the senses come under control. But when we're not satisfied, the mind becomes unruly, the mind becomes very, very uncontrollable, wicked, and it drags us around the universe for different forms of satisfaction or gratification of the senses in unlimited varieties. 8,400,000 species of life, and within those species of life, unlimited varieties of sense gratification are provided by the material energy. That's because the mind was out of control, and we never tried to control the mind. But if we control the mind, then we don't need these things. Anatta. They're superfluous, or they've got no value or wealth. There's no use in pursuing the path of sense gratification. You're going to get suffering there. Definitely there'll be suffering when we engage the senses and the objects of the senses for satisfaction, for our satisfaction. Then we get suffering. We've all experienced that. It's not really rocket science that we're going to suffer. If we go from to a sense gratification, we're going to suffer. And we've been hearing in the last few lectures, this Karuna Nidhi Prabhu and Ganga Prabhu, this propensity of the living entity to adjust things, to make adjustments in the material world so that we can get that degree of satisfaction that we're seeking. But we know it's a phantasmagoria. We know it's a mirage in the desert. We know it's not going to happen. But still, the material energy is so strong that we become covered over, and we endeavor for this useless pursuit of happiness through the contact of the senses with the material energy. It doesn't happen. In the 17th chapter in the Gita, Krishna says, mana prasada somyatvam, that for the mind to become satisfied, mana prasada, when the mind is peaceful, this is an austerity. Says it lists austerities of the mind, and satisfaction of the mind is an austerity. That's part of our duty of everybody. Everybody has this duty. Every living and every human being has a duty to make the mind peaceful, to pacify the mind. Mana prasada samatam. Monam atma vinigraha. Baba samsudi ityetat. Purification of our existence. Baba samsudi ityetat. Mona tapo mana uchate. This is considered to be the austerities of the mind. Satisfaction, simplicity. It's an austerity of the mind, and it's something Prabhupada says in the purport in this 17th chapter verse, that for the mind to become peaceful and not to be always seeking after sense gratification, one should divert the mind to the Vedic literatures. He says there's no shortage of literature in the Puranas and the Vedas, Srimad Bhagavatam. There's no shortage of stories, he says, Mahabharata, Ramayana. And he says these stories are so engaging that they will automatically pacify the mind. And at the same time, they will enable us to become detached from the material energy. The mind will become pacified, satisfied, because it's engaging in this transcendental vibration of Krishna and Krishna Katha. And there will be no longer any attraction for the material energy. Or it diminishes to almost nothing. It says in Prabhupada says it will vanish. Gradually it vanishes. When we become attached to hearing Krishna, Krishna Katha, the Krishna book, to reading the pastimes and activities of the different avatars, yena yena avatarina, Bhagavan Hari Ishvaraha, at the beginning of the chapter of Trinavata. It said there that by hearing these pastimes of the various activities of Krishna, yena yena avatarina, Bhagavan Hadirishvaraha, kana karoti kana ramyani manogyani sana prabho. O Sukadeva Goswami, King Parikshit speaking, he opens up most of these chapters, and he's opening up these chapters and he's asking. He's developed a desire to hear more and more and more pastimes and activities of Krishna, so his mind becomes satisfied and peaceful. And he no longer thinks about satisfying, he no longer thinks about drinking water, because that's what got him into the mess in the first place. Parikshit Maharaj, he was thirsty, and he went to the ashram of the Rishi, and he went for some water, and he couldn't, he got cursed. But since he developed this taste for hearing yena yena avatarina Bhagavan Hari Ishvara about Krishna and his pastimes and activities, he doesn't want to drink water anymore. He doesn't want to eat. He doesn't want to sleep. He's transcended the modes of material nature. He's come to a transcendental platform, particularly in the 10th canto. And Prabhupada explains why in this purport to Yeni Yenabhatavana. That Karoti Kanaramyani, the ear becomes satisfied and the mind becomes satisfied. Managya. The mind becomes peaceful because of satisfied. Because it's what we're relishing to hear, the eternal nature of the soul. The soul becomes awakened, reawakened when we hear Harikata, Mukundasya Satkata, Uttamashloka Satkata, Mukundasya Mahatmana. When we hear about Mukunda, when we hear about Govinda, when we hear about Krishna's transcendental pastimes, we become enlivened. When you hear about all these different football stars and everything, it's not so transcendental. You know, if you're barracked for that team, you become enlivened. But if the team loses, it's a big bummer. Right? And if someone gets injured, it's very, you know, you become all upset. But it's temporary. How long can it go? Yes, last night I went to visit my family and I was watching the football. AFL football. Right? Sitting in the big front of the big plasma. Right? And they were so absorbed. You know, I haven't seen them for like a year or something. It's just like, you know. We'll talk to you after the game, you know. Totally fixed on this game. And then after about half an hour, I finished. And then my brother-in-law came out of another room. And I thought he'd just come home. And so I, you know, welcomed him and said hello. And he says, oh, I always watch the match in my office. In the room. I have a separate room, a separate television for the match because I don't want to get disturbed. You know, there's too much disturbance out here in the big total absorption. Very serious about this football. Very exciting. And we have to become like that with Krishna. That was what I learned last night. We have to become so absorbed that we don't want to get disturbed, and we're just going to get our own room just to study Krishna Katha and to read Bhagavatam and to hear the Krishna book. Right? So much. We have to be so absorbed in it. And then Prabhupada says in this purport that when you hear about Purushit Maharaj, he's inviting Sukadev Goswami. He says that he's got a strong desire. Srota Mishchami, He Prabhu. I want to hear. That's my desire. I want to hear. So about Krishna. So Sukadev Goswami is reciprocating and he's becoming enlivened by the inspirational questions of Parikshit Maharaj. And there, Prabhupada says that the mind becomes peaceful and happy, the ears become satisfied, and he says, generally we don't want to hear too much about Krishna's avatars. It says, yen yen avatar in a Bhagavan Hadishvara. Generally we're not so interested, or we're interested, but we like to hear for a little while. Varaha, for a little while. Matsya, we can listen for a little while. Lord Nrsingadev, a bit longer. But generally he says, but Prabhupada says, he weaved this into his translation. It's an amazing translation in the 10th canto, 10.7.1, 10.7.1.2. And he says that, but Krishna's childhood pastimes are so attractive that anybody would listen to them. Krishna's childhood pastimes are very special. They're different to all other avatars, Krishna's childhood pastimes. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that this Krishna Katha of Krishna's childhood pastimes are what we can share, you know, and relish in the association of the devotees. So Sampa Sangam Mamavidi Sambhido. It's a Rasayana Katha. It's a Katha that gives immortality. This Katha of Krishna's childhood pastimes. Rasa Lila and later pastimes, they're all sweet. The creation of the universe is sweet. If we're on that level, the creation of the universe is wow. That's how it's created and we get inside that. It's amazing. Yeah. First canto, second canto, third canto, very amazing. But Krishna's childhood pastimes is something that is attractive for everybody. Everybody likes children. I mean, if you don't, then there's something wrong with you. But most people like children. Nearly the whole universe likes children and childhood pastimes. So Krishna has childhood pastimes, but Matsya Avatar, you don't like children? Matsya Avatar, he doesn't have childhood pastimes. I mean, very quick pastimes. He's a little child, a little fish, And then he becomes big very quickly. He doesn't have much other pastimes. And Varaha, he also comes out little, but he's quick very big, and he's enormous. Right? No childhood pastimes for Varaha. No childhood pastimes for Matsya. No even Lord Ramchandra, very little, we hear so little in the Balakanda of Ramayana. We don't hear much about Ramchandra. He's playing around in Ayodhya in the palace. We don't hear anything practically. He just goes to Gurukula and then he goes up to Vishwamitra Muni. So very little is described there of Ramchandra. And Lord Lakshmadev, he comes out straight away as a big lion, half man, half lion. He doesn't come out as a little Lakshmadev and grow up, and he has little Lakshmadev pastimes. And we'd rather she's little Lakshmadev pastimes. He's big already. Right? So, but Krishna has these very, very sweet childhood pastimes. And because of those sweet childhood pastimes, the devotees become attracted. That's what attracts devotees, and that's what pacifies the mind, satisfies the mind. The mind can hear about Krishna, little Krishna. That little Krishna DVD series has become a worldwide box office smashing hit. You know, you wouldn't believe in countries where this is shown, like every day. In Indonesia, it's a Muslim country, right? Heavy Muslim country in Indonesia. It's on every night on television, on national television, Little Krishna. He's the hero of Indonesia, Little Krishna. Every Muslim. I was in Jakarta one time on the back of a bike a couple of years ago, and everyone drives motorbikes. I was on the back of a bike, and there was a bike in front of us, and the kid had a Little Krishna t-shirt on. And I said to the devotee driving the bike, riding the bike, I said, "Oh, they're going to the temple too. They must be going to the Sunday feast." And he said, "They're not going to the Sunday feast." I said, "Yeah, they're devotees." And he said, "Why are they devotees?" And I said, "Because he's got Little Krishna." And he said, "They're Muslims. They're going to the mosque. They're not going to the temple." The whole country, they have all the paraphernalia for the kids, the bag. We have Barbie and everything on the back of the kids' bags, the little backpacks, if you want, pink backpack, and it's got Barbie, and it's got all these different characters. In Indonesia, they got this mass amount of millions of bags of Little Krishna in the back, and t-shirts of Little Krishna, and pencil cases of Little Krishna, and books, exercise books, the children's books at school, they've got Little Krishna on the front. It's like, Krishna's very attractive, even in Indonesia. Indonesia's quite a heavy country. And of course in India, this year in Janmashtami, they're going to release another very, very big animation, the next kind of level up of Little Krishna. So he's super attractive, and they know that, and so they're cashing in on that. Even Muslims, they've got a market there. They've got billions of people in the world watching Little Krishna, because the storyline is very attractive. His personality is very attractive. It said when Mother Yashoda, Krishna turned 3 months old, and he turned slightly on his side, and that was the time to have a festival. Because Krishna turned like that. Should have a festival. Krishna turned on his side. So we have a festival. And it was at that festival that Mother Yashoda put baby Krishna underneath a cart, Shakata. And while he was underneath Shakata Adaha, he's lying, sitting underneath the cart, this little Krishna, he had legs like this long. He's only like 3 months old. He's a pretty small baby. Chubby and small. And his feet are this big, you know, really little feet. And he's sitting under a cart, which is big, and the cart has heavy utensils, all paraphernalia for yagya and paraphernalia for deity worship and everything like that. Big brass stuff, right? Not plastic plates and spoons and cups and stuff. Big, heavy brass plates and bowls and containers for the puja, for the yagya. And this little baby Krishna said his feet were soft like the newly budded leaf of a plant. When the green leaf that comes out is so soft and it's a different colour and it's a different texture. That little leaf, the one that comes out first, his feet were like that, so soft. And his legs were very little. They couldn't reach anywhere near the cart. And he turned up, and Mother Yashoda wasn't coming, and so he kicked the cart with all of his force, and he broke the axle on the cart, and all the utensils and paraphernalia went flying. And Mother Yashoda comes and she grabs baby Krishna. And she performs nyasa and she chants mantras for his protection and purification and well-being, and feeds baby Krishna. And We know Krishna liberated this Shakata Asura, Asura that was taking shelter there. And he'd already killed Putana, extracted her life air from her breast. And then Krishna performs a series of attractive pastimes that nobody can perform. It says that Krishna comes to the material world, Kritaran Kilakamani, Sahara Mena Keshava. Keshava comes along with Rama, with Krishna, with Balaram. They come here, Ati Madhyani Bhagavan Gudakapata Manushaha. They come into the material world to perform superman activities, superhuman activities. And these activities have never been performed before, never to be performed again by any human being. That only Krishna can perform these activities. And it's explained that these pastimes, like the Damodar Leela pastime, Krishna performing his Damodar Leela, his every aspect of the pastime is something that will, that increases our attachment for Krishna. It's a very enchanting pastime of Krishna, being bound by the love of Mother Yashoda, by the ropes of Mother Yashoda, and the lessons that we learn. And Krishna, who is feared by death personified, he's fearful of Mother Yashoda. And Krishna, who is Atmarama, he's always completely self-satisfied, but he wants to eat Navanitam. He always wants to eat butter, Krishna, but he's self-satisfied. And Krishna, who's, he can achieve anything, but he needs Mother Yashoda's affection, her love. And Krishna, who's, he's faster than the speed of the mind, Krishna can, he can outrun anybody, but Mother Yashoda captures him. And Krishna, who is, he's vaster than the extent of the entire universe, he's restricted by the ropes of Mother Yashoda eventually. So all of these contradictions or apparent paradoxes in Krishna's pastimes are very enchanting, and they give the mind something to churn over and to connect with. We can visualize and we can sensually experience Krishna's pastime and activities. And that becomes a reference point for us. That becomes a part of our world view, Paripashyati Darshanam. The devotees have this particular vision on the world that they connect everything with Krishna, because Krishna is the filter system. Our filter system is Krishna, and we see things through that vision. And therefore, we don't have any need for these superfluous things. Devotees become satisfied because they become absorbed, Prabhupada says, in the Vedic literature, the pastimes and activities of Krishna. At the beginning of the pastime of Sudama Vipra, much later on in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it said there that Kono Sukra Srutva Sakrit Brahman, who, again, he's speaking, Pritchard now just speaking, he's saying that who were, having heard the pastimes, Srutva Sakrit Brahman, having heard the pastimes of Krishna, these transcendental pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, having heard them, how could anybody go for material sense gratification? That will completely satisfy them. Just to hear the pastimes and activities, Viryana Nanta Viryani, the chivalrous pastimes, the attractive pastimes of Krishna. If you've heard them, you're not going to give them up. It says, Vira Metta Visheshagyo, the person who's got discrimination, Visheshagya. Prabhupada talks about that in his purport. And for human beings, we're the ones who can discriminate. The animals can't. We have to protect them because they can't discriminate. They're under our protection. So those who can discriminate, Vira Metta Visheshagyo, Vishana Kama Magana, and who are completely disgusted with the path of sense gratification, how could they ever give up Krishna? They can't give up Krishna consciousness. They can't give it up because they're completely brainwashed. Their consciousness is completely being captivated by Krishna and Krishna Katha, and therefore there's no need for these factories, and there's no need for all the artificial things. They're unlimited. I was thinking about the element of consumer society. It's so expertly packaged by advertising and mass media that they create within us, whether you know gross, in a gross way or in a subtle way, they produce within us unlimited desires. So expert. It's unlimited desires and think, if I just get that product, I'll be happy. If I just get that, that will satisfy my soul. Yeah, it might supersede it. My soul will be completely satisfied if I have an iPad 4G. Even if I can't connect to the 4G in the Australian network, I'll still be satisfied, right? If I have an iPad. Or if I get my iPhone 4, whatever it is now, I'll be happy. And I can line all of my gadgets up. And I'll be satisfied, and I'm thinking, I should get an iPad, you know. I'm going to India, it'd be really cool to read this on the plane, and blah, blah, blah. If I just get an iPad, and then probably I should get an iPhone, too. And I've got an iPad and an iPhone. And it's not in the budget, but I should have it. And I'm thinking, ah, to hell with the budget. I need these things. You know, I really need these things. Heaps of cool devotees have got them. I should have it, too. Then I look at my laptop and I think, well, I've got a new laptop, you know. That's got Prabhupada's books on it. I can read Prabhupada's books on the laptop. I can connect to the internet on the laptop. I've got a wireless connection on the laptop. And then I thought, no, I'm not going to get an iPad. I don't need an iPad, you know. It would be super cool, but I don't need it. And then, you know, we can become... Sometimes you just want to pick up a book, actually. Sometimes you just want to... Sometimes it's easier to reference a book than it is to reference something. Even though you've got a search engine, you can do a function tool and find something really quick. Sometimes it's quicker to pick up a book because you know where it is, or you've got a good index, or and find a verse. I find that many times. So that's a part of being self-satisfaction. Of course, we have this principle of yukta vairagya that always takes us into that grey area of, you know, boy, I can utilize this in Krishna's service. I can utilize this Harley Davidson in Krishna's service. Sure I can. We can utilize practically anything because we know we have to connect everything. Yukta, Yubanda Krishna Sambhada, Yukta Vairagya Vichita. But simplicity is the call of the day. And so, who will not hear this pastime? Only those who are slaughtering the animals. That's the medicine. It's the babosha-dhi, the medicine. And therefore we become self-satisfied and peaceful. And that's the purpose. When the mind is satisfied, we don't need extraneous things. And I'll just finish with one of my favorite quotes from Srila Prabhupada in the Isha Upanishad. And Prabhupada's explaining in the introduction to the Isha Upanishad that everything's complete. The whole universe is a complete package. And we're a part and parcel of that complete package. Human beings, yeah. We're all complete packages. And we have a tendency as this part and parcel of the complete package to think that when we're incomplete and we want to fill up the gap. And Prabhupada says all feeling that we have, all sense of incompleteness is due to incomplete knowledge of the absolute whole. Right? When we have knowledge of Krishna, we don't feel incomplete. We don't feel there's any gaps to fill. We don't feel like we need to make adjustments because we know that Krishna, we see the hand of Krishna in everything. And we become self-satisfied. And we can give that to others. And the conclusion of the Gita is that if we give it to others, we'll get more. That's our purpose. So we don't become Vajanamandis. We actually want to give other people Krishna and Krishna Katha. Any questions or comments or realizations to share? Prabhu?
As you said, in certain parts, Ramayana will come, the eastern part of UP, as you go to Ayodhya. And if you come towards Mathura, Agra, Vrindavan, all Krishna's glories. So it's very enchanting. People are just absorbed in it. Although they are poor, they have hardly any work. In living conditions are pretty poor. But they are absorbed in Krishna's thought. They never think of any music, they just think of Krishna. Last month I was in Germany, and people are converted by Prabhupada's teaching. They are the doctors whom I used to meet before, now she's greeting me, Radhe Radhe. Saying Radhe Radhe.
In Germany.
So it's a change consciousness. Mm-hmm. The Prabhupada influence has really spread all over the world, mm-hmm. and people are very much changed now.
Yeah.
She is making nice Indian prasadam. Mm-hmm. Three nights she gave me nice one in Germany. I couldn't expect him. Then Narsingdev felt the same thing. She really dosa, everything is there. All Indian dishes. And Indian ladies are serving there very nicely. So what you are saying, we are absorbed in Krishna. So we don't have to worry about anything.
That's true. Thank you, Mahatmaji. Mukundasya Mahatmanaha.
Prabhu, we are trying to control mind and senses. Sometimes there are pushes of mind and senses which forces us to act against the principles, regulatory principles. How we should overcome this situation?
Good question. Practical question. How to overcome the influence of the pushes of the mind that force us to act. Arjuna asked the same question. To act almost as, you know, we're forced to act in this way. So one of the ways to control the mind, two things, is we have to detach it. If we don't do some form of conscious detachment, then the mind can't become satisfied. The mind will always be looking for something else if we don't start to detach it from material things that we've been attached to for so long. That's a practical thing. So to begin to detach it. And the other thing is that we need to cultivate knowledge. We have to understand what we're doing in Krishna consciousness. We have to understand the mechanisms of this thing. And if we understand that what Krishna says, yayato vishayapam samsangas teshu pajayate, sangat sanjayate kama krodha pajayate, that if we understand that Krishna's presentation is scientific and we get inside the science of Krishna consciousness, that it's a logical presentation, and Krishna is saying in a very profound way, in a very penetrating way, that if you what you meditate upon, you're going to get that thing. I mean, this is New Age philosophy. You know, they've taken so much of what Krishna says and packaged it in their own way and taken ownership of this. But Dhyayato Vishayam Sam comes from Krishna. Krishna says, you think of this, it's going to manifest eventually. From your thought process, from the subtle comes the gross. So we have to believe in that and practice it, and not say, oh yeah, that's Krishna speaking 5,000 years ago in the middle of a battlefield. But we're living in our own battlefield, and we can be successful in this battle of dealing with the mind. And we all have the problem. We all have the same problem. Sometimes it's just like overwhelming. I think I can't go on anymore, you know. There's too much for me. You walk out into the street, you know, onto a tram or something. It's finished. But then you have to gather your senses, pick up your Gandiva Bhava, and remember Krishna. Our greatest fear is that we forget Krishna. That's the greatest fear that we have, of forgetting Krishna. Because when we remember Krishna, Krishna will help us to overcome difficulties that we're experiencing. Yogakshemam Bahamya. He'll always be there to protect us. So we learn to cry out to Krishna for protection. Like, Krishna, please save me from the onslaught of this material energy. It's too much for me. I can't do this thing. It's too much for me by myself. And we all have that experience. All of us here in this room have had multiple experiences of the mind being too much, right? And the senses are going too wild. And what are we going to do about it? We have to bring it back in. Like, yada samarate chayam korman ganiva sarvashah. Like the tortoise brings its limbs back inside the shell. And the shell protects the body of the tortoise. So the shell of transcendental knowledge, the shell of Krishna's instructions, Puranako Dhanoritaha, the torchbearers for the Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga is not an easy place. The torchbearers for the Kali Yuga is Jnana. Dhamma kam sharanam kata. Where did Dhamma go? When Krishna and the Pandavas left the planet, where did Dhamma go? Dhamma went to the Bhagavatam and to the Gita. And so that's our shell of protection. The instruction of the Gita. And we have visual. Krishna gave us a lot of visual metaphors to meditate upon. Just hearing, it says what you hear, you remember 30% of it or something. Especially in Kali Yuga. It's getting less and less, right? What you hear. But what you hear and see, you can pick up maybe 50%. And what you hear and see and you do, then you pick up maximum. You're getting more and more. But just by hearing, it's not enough. You have to visualize it and you have to practice it and teach it. And then we'll be able to start this work of overcoming the mind, the pushings of the mind. And Krishna's regulated things for us. It's not that the mind's never going to be satisfied. These things, Krishna has made that sex life, dharma guru kamo smi, sex life is a completely acceptable reality of the conditioned soul, conditioned nature. But it's done in a regulated way, then it becomes dharma, becomes spiritual. It becomes part of our samsiddhi, it becomes part of our bhava samsiddhi, it becomes part of our purification of the body to do that in this particular part of your life. And in this particular way, and for this particular purpose, that becomes dharma in that ashram. In this ashram, it's adharma. In the brahmachari ashram, it's adharma. But in this ashram, it's dharma when it's executed according to regulation and not according to the hogs and the dogs, which Prabhupada refers to here. Sva vidvara hasta kare samstuta purusha pashuhu. Those people who are glorified, those men who are glorified, who never hear about the transcendental pastimes and activities of Krishna. Mayat kana pato peto, jatu namagaragarajaha, who's the deliverer from all miseries. Those who are like those, it says, those who are like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. Sva is a dog. Vidvaraha is a hog who eats stool. Ustraha, a camel. Karaha, an ass. Hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. Those who are like those who are hogs, dogs, camels, asses, they glorify other hogs, dogs, camels, and asses who never hear the transcendental pastimes of Krishna. And Prabhupada's last statement in that purport in the second canto is that they may be considered very elevated in the estimation of human society. They may be considered, but they're dogs, they're animals to a greater degree than the ones who voted them in and who are glorifying them. They're animals to a greater degree because they haven't heard about Krishna and his transcendental pastimes, and they maintain slaughterhouses and they maintain the wicked mind. Anything else? Mathis?
I just want to ask a question. I was thinking about the Prabhupada, what he said, if we have a garden. He was speaking to the garden, they didn't want to put so much flowers. And Prabhupada said, no, you have to put a lot of flowers so the weeds won't grow. And then he said, similarly, in devotional service, you have to do a lot of service for Krishna so you will not let other thoughts come to you. Because if you do service, you have to think what you're doing, how you're doing, and you will not have time for other things.
Thank you for that.
One other question.
Yes, sir.
Is Krishna's child and pastimes appearing only in the material world?
Krishna's child and pastimes appear eternally. They're happening now. They happen everywhere, Krishna's pastimes. But they're not manifest here in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But they're going on somewhere in another universe, this pastimes. With varieties, Krishna likes to spice it up a bit. So slight different varieties, but Krishna's performing pastimes. Slightly different Govardhan Leela, slightly different Shakatasura, but same principle to attract the mind of the conditioned souls. And in the spiritual world they're eternally going on, but there's no demons being killed there. So his childhood pastimes are different. Maybe that's another reason why they're special.
How to improve chanting is the main thing.
How to improve our chanting. Well, sometimes, I think I recommended the other day, we have to slow down a bit sometimes. We have a tendency to think we've got to get through these rounds. I've got to knock these rounds off. And when I finish my 16, I'm done. Finally, I've finished my rounds. But the idea is not to finish your rounds, to never finish your rounds. I mean, of course, to count 16, that's good. But to slow down, I'm fortunate because I have a wife that can tell me that I'm not chanting properly. And then I tell her that she's not chanting properly. But it's have a friend that can help you. You know, the classic one that we miss out on is Hari Hari. It says, Iti Sora Shakam Nam Nam. There's 16 words in the Maha Mantra. And when you chant the 16 words in the Maha Mantra, 32 syllables, that's Sarva Vedisha Drishti. That's the highest in the Vedas. But the 15, 12, it's not. It's not going to do it. There's much better mantras than that in the Vedas. Only 16 words. But the other mantra that we chant, Hare Krishna, Ram Ram, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Ram Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Ram, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Those mantras are not going to get us very far. They're better than nothing. But we must slow down and hear the whole mantra. And you'll find when you slow down, you're able to pick up speed again later on by slowing down. But first we have to, like Tiger Woods, you know, when he wanted to change his swing, he was doing pretty good. He was, you know, hitting 5 or 6 under par. But he changed his swing and he was pulling off lots of world championships. But he changed his swing, he's a golf player. He changed his swing of the club. And he wasn't doing very well for about a year. He was like just getting under par and he was winning a couple of tournaments, but not all of them. But then after a year, with this new swing, he practiced it and practiced it and practiced it. Then he went to like 10 under par and he won all the tournaments. So sometimes you've got to slow it down a bit. It might seem a bit harder, it might take you longer to chant, but it's worth it. Antara Rishimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Prabhu.